This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
AstroCast is poured for you by Carbach Brewing. Get highlights, interviews, the latest news surrounding MLB, and your Astros. Brought to you by Carbach Brewing.
Looking up. See you later. Into the Landry's Crawford boxes.
Subscribe to AstroCast.
Expecting a great season with this Astros team.
The official podcast of the Houston Astros.
It's going to be a lot of fun the whole way.
Greetings from Minute Maid Park, where today the Houston Astros wrap up their six-game homestand with the finale of a three-game series against the Texas Rangers. Astros have taken the first two games of this series, including a 4-1 win over the Rangers yesterday. Yordan Alvarez, two hits, including a homer, drove into. Framber Valdez struck out four over six hitless innings, did not allow a run, as the Astros have won 4 of 5 so far on this homestand. Rangers, meanwhile, have lost 11 in a row. Astros are 60-39. That's first in the AL West, 4.5 games ahead of Oakland, and 25 games ahead of the Rangers, who are last in the division with a record of 35-64. Let's take a look at our pitching matchup, brought to you by the official healthcare provider for the Houston Astros, Houston Methodist Leading Medicine. It's Zach Greinke on the mound for the Astros today, trying to become the fourth 10-game winner in the American League today, a 3.58 earned run average.
He's been a real workhorse for the Astros this year, fourth in the American League in innings pitched. And I think it's a good matchup for Zach, the way he likes to tease the edges of the strike zone. And I think the Rangers might chase some of those pitches that aren't in the strike zone.
Meanwhile, the Rangers going with a bullpen day, and left-hander Taylor Hearn is getting the start. It's going to be the second time this year he started on a bullpen day in his third career start, and neither of those starts has he made it out of the first inning.
Yeah, the most pitches he's thrown this year is 50 pitches. That was on opening day in relief. So don't expect him to go real long. I would imagine they'd be really happy if he can get into the third inning, and they'll just go from there and see how they can play the matchups going on the rest of the ball game. But Taylor Hearn is a hard-throwing left-handed pitcher, has a good hard two-seam fastball. He's been a little erratic with his control throughout his career, but they feel like in the long term, if they can harness some of that control, he could be a real valuable piece in the bullpen later on.
We'll be back with more of Astro Launch right after this.
And Altuve hits it in the air, pretty deep to left. Going back is LoCastro at the wall. Looking up. See you later. 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 Astros win it in the bottom of the ninth.
This is the Houston Astros.
And it's deja vu all over again.
Radio Network.
Well, Miles Straw not in the lineup for the Astros today. Chaz McCormick getting the start in center field. And McCormick, man, what a valuable player he has been. You didn't really know what you were going to get. Did not have the best spring. Hadn't been in the big leagues getting a chance to play until this year. But he's been up all year and has done a really nice job as that fourth outfielder for the Astros.
It's not an easy job, especially to be a young player and to be able to come off the bench, something he's never done, especially as a major leaguer. So I think about Aledmys Díaz and what makes him so good at playing part-time, and I think it's that simple swing. It's just very economical and efficient, and I think those types of players thrive off the bench because they don't have a lot of moving parts.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Astros general manager James Click, as we do every Sunday, but now this from your local station.
Subscribe to AstroCast.
Joined by Justin Verlander,
Lance McCullers,
Michael Brantley,
tons of interviews,
Alex Bregman,
Carlos Correa.
Follow your favorite team.
We definitely love playing in front of our fans at Minute Maid.
For the H. AstroCast is poured for you by Carbach Brewing.
Welcome back. Robert Ford joined by Astros general manager James Click, who is a busy man right now, but was able to stop by before the Astros take on the Texas Rangers, trying to get the sweep today. And trade deadline obviously coming up on Friday. And if you could just take us into, I don't know if it's a war room or what have you, but and I'm obviously there are lots of people involved, but who are kind of the principals that you guys are kind of like, hey, we need to all make sure we're in contact or near each other as much as possible during this time?
Yeah, there's different philosophies I've found throughout the game. Mm-hmm. Some people like to have a very small room. Some people like to have a big room, very inclusive room. And there's pros and cons to each of them. My default, especially this being my second year here, is to have a bigger room. I want to hear from everybody that we've got. People who know the organization better than I do, especially as some of the conversations mature into the point where you're exchanging names. If somebody asks about a player, I need to have more people in there to tell me, who is this guy? What do we think about him? You know, what can't we read in the scouting report? What can't we see on video? Those kind of things. And so it's a very large room. You know, I like to have a lot of different voices in there. We obviously have our analysts, our R&D guys. We have what's called our baseball strategy group, headed up by Bill Ferkus. And, you know, that group really helps out with a lot of the contracts and the strategy of it. We have our sort of our pro scouting analyst group is in there, a few other people. And then beyond that, you know, I spend a lot of time on the phone with other people around the organization who might not be actually in the room, but, you know, a Bagwell, an Enos, a Biggio, you call those guys, what do you think? Obviously, Jim Crane is very, very closely involved with everything that's going on. And so by dint of that, like, the room gets pretty big. But, you know, there's a few of us that are going to be in there for quite a few hours over the next week or so.
We've talked about this before. You've said this publicly to others. You know, pitching obviously is the priority, and I mean, it's a priority for every team that's in a position to contend. As far as the Astros go, does this handedness matter very much? Does swing and miss stuff matter? I mean, what, is there anything in particular that kind of stands out for you?
Well, I guess first of all, Jim Crane likes to say there's three things that you need in baseball: pitching, and pitching. Yeah. I told him we have the first two. We're working on the third one. Yeah. So the thing about pitching, and especially these days when we get so much information on these guys, is that there are many, many different ways to skin a cat. I think you look at our roster and you can see that, even just our starting rotation, a variety of different styles, a variety of different weapons, a variety of different ways to get guys out. And in a lot of ways, I think we understand the mechanics of that and how guys get guys out pitching these days, maybe better than we did 10, 20 years ago. But in a lot of ways, it's also highlighted what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's just guys who get guys out and you can't explain why it is. And you just have to accept, I can't explain this, but they have gotten guys out and they probably will continue to do so.
How much does the crackdown on the sticky stuff factor in terms of evaluating pitchers?
Honestly, it's something that I think slowed things down a little bit at the end of last month when some teams said, hey, we want to wait to see how this impacts the game, how it impacts the style of play. Does it impact some players more than others? What I want to make sure that we do is keep it all in context and don't assume that if a guy has a change in repertoire that that's a causation. It may just be timing. It may be every July this guy changes.
Yeah. So
it is a factor. It's something that we do think about, but it is not the forefront of our minds, certainly. And I think beyond that, it's good. We all just want the level playing field. That's what we're going for here in baseball. And the fact that they have leveled it, I think, is good for the game.
One guy who hopefully you'll be getting back soon here is Alex Bregman. And found out today he's starting a rehab assignment tomorrow for Triple A Sugarland. I know he's been chomping at the bit to come back from this quad injury. I mean, chomping at the bit maybe more than your average player. But obviously good news. Do you have a kind of a sense, and obviously depends on how things go, do you have a kind of a sense of how long this rehab assignment might be?
He said somewhere between 15 and 30 at-bats is what he feels like he needs to get his timing back. So we'll see how long that takes. The way that the Sugarland offense goes, you might be able to get six at-bats a game sometimes. The main thing is just getting his timing back, making sure this is completely behind him. He is a player that is always pushing to get better, always pushing to get back. I think it's a tremendous influence in the clubhouse and for the rest of the roster. But sometimes you have to just hold him back a little bit for his own good. But it's certainly great news that he's heading to Oklahoma City, and hopefully we'll get him back out here soon.
Alemis Diaz, he's been rehabbing. He's been with AA Corpus Christi. Might we see him in Seattle?
I hope so. We just want to check on him. He played back-to-back Friday and Saturday. Let's get some eyes on him, make sure that he reports feeling good, and I think there's a very real possibility. So we'll see how that is.
All right. We'll be back with more with Astros General Manager James Click right after this. Young Astros fans, it's never too early to show off your Astros pride. With the season in full swing, be a part of the official Astros Kids Club today.
Kids 12 and under can join the Astros Buddies Club and receive a Buddies backpack, cap, socks, and access to exclusive events and activities throughout the year.
All for only $25. What's even better, it will get shipped right to your door. For more information and to purchase your Astros Buddies membership,
visit astros.com/buddies today.
Welcome back once again, joined by Astros General Manager James Click. And, you know, the draft, obviously, behind you. You're getting guys signed. at this point, and I believe it's 15 guys who have been signed out of the draft class. Is the expectation that, I mean, now you probably have a better idea, and the deadline is coming up on the 1st. You feel like you'll be able to get all of these guys signed?
Yeah, we're optimistic. But one interesting change to the schedule this year is with the draft as late as it is, the draft deadline being August 1st, the right. trading deadline being July 30th, I have had to really focus my attention on the Major League roster and the trade deadline, and I have left the draft and the follow-up and the logistics of that to Chris Gross and Charles Cook and that group mm-hmm. over there. So I don't know that I'm the right person to answer all the questions yeah. right now, but certainly when we went through the draft, the expectation is to be able to come out of it with all of them signed. Obviously, some things can go sideways on you in terms of physicals or just changes or changes of heart or anything. So it's never certain, but no, our hope and our expectation is to get everybody in here.
And you bring up a good point. We talked about this a little bit before we went on the air about just kind of the compression of the schedule with the trade deadline and the signing deadline for draft picks, and then you have the draft during the All-Star break, which usually is kind of like a legit break for a lot of folks in your position. And I'd imagine it has to be especially tough for guys like you and some other guys in scouting or what have you who kind of are used to kind of going back and forth between the pro side and the amateur side. So is it requiring a lot of compartmentalization for your staff and for yourself?
Yeah, it is, and it's requiring keeping more balls in the air than we're used to keeping.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to quite a few other teams around the game and certainly my own experiences here, normally you get through the draft and then there's a large group of people who evaluate players for the draft, and then they spend the next month or so going out to the affiliates and evaluating the players that might be involved at the deadline. That's not something that we're able to do right now. I myself, as soon as the draft was over, went out to a couple of our affiliates because I wanted to put eyes on some of these players that might be discussed.
Right.
And so this having to do both at the same time is putting a strain on not only our front office, but quite a few front offices around the game. And it'll be interesting to see if it has any real effect on things.
And also some free agent signings as well after the draft, some you know, undrafted players. And obviously there's going to be more of that now with the draft to 20 rounds as opposed to being 40 rounds like it was just a couple of years ago. When it comes to free agent signings after the draft, is it one of those things where you already kind of have guys targeted, or is it you kind of look at what, you know, where the draft went and, all right, these are kind of our needs? How did you guys approach that?
In the past, it would have been more trying to fill out the rosters of the short season teams. But given that we don't have the short season teams yeah. anymore, there's not the same prioritization of, oh, we need a shortstop to go to Tri-Cities or something like this. In my experience, it's more, okay, who are the top guys on our board at round 20 mm-hmm. who were not selected? Let's go see, is this something that they want to do, or do they want to go back to school and wait one more year?
Is it the sort of thing, how much leverage do these guys have? Because on one hand, they haven't been drafted, so there's that. But on the other hand, you know, potentially 30 organizations could be bidding for their services.
Well, there is the hard cap of, you know, the most that you can give them as a bonus is $20,000.
Uh-huh.
And so in our efforts, it has been more about selling the Astros and our player development. And I do think it's a real calling card of the organization that we have drafted and developed players as well as anybody in the game over the past few years. And so we have gone to a lot of those guys and said, hey, if you have your pick of 30 organizations, we have a lot of experience developing guys. We think this is the place where you have the best chance to get to the major leagues.
I wanted to ask you about one of the guys in the Astros system, Zach Daniels, who was a fourth-round pick last year out of Tennessee, and I think he's really interesting. I mean, we saw him. He was in, you know, he got some time in big league camp, and there's a lot of tools there, but there's just so little to go by because his first 2 years at Tennessee didn't play particularly well, but then his last year at Tennessee, he put up good numbers, but then the pandemic happened, so it wound up being a shortened season for him. I'd imagine that had to be kind of a tricky thing, just evaluating him even coming into the draft in terms of, okay, this is a guy with all these tools, but how much of this is actually real?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what goes to our scouting group to try to figure that out. And by the time we got to the fourth round last year, the appeal of the upside, even if there is a lot of risk there, was something that we talked about quite a bit. Zach is a supreme athlete, just a really impressive athlete, really tooled up. He was in Fayetteville when I was there, and then actually got promoted to Asheville
right.
while I was in Asheville. So he and Luke Berryhill were all promoted, and so they actually showed up in Asheville a couple days after I got there. So it was good to see all three of them. Certainly Zach to get the promotion. He's earned it. They've all earned it. with that athleticism, we need to work on harnessing it and controlling it and refining the approach at the plate. But boy, if you can do that, you know, you could have a very, very impressive player. One of the games in Fayetteville, he hit a ball and it probably still hasn't landed. And I texted Pete Petilla and I was like, Zach just ruined a baseball. And he was like, that's great. You know, so it's in there. The trick is just making sure that it gets in there regularly.
All right, James Click, Astros General Manager, thanks for joining us, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about this time next week.
Boy, I hope so.
We'll be back with more of AstroLaunch right after this.
Subscribe to AstroCast.
Joined by Justin Verlander.
Lance McCullers.
Michael Brantley.
Tons of interviews.
Alex Bregman.
Carlos Correa.
Follow your favorite team.
We definitely love playing in front of our fans at Minute Maid.
For the H. AstroCast is poured for you by Carmack Brewing.
Well, we're very happy to have Josh Miller, one of the Astros pitching coaches, as our guest today. And Josh, first of all, thanks for joining us. How's everything been going?
Everything's been going good. You know, had a nice little all-star break, and we dropped a few games there in Chicago, but, you know, hoping to get on the right track and get back to our winning ways.
We talked to Gary Pettis last week, and I wanted to ask you this question because he mentioned when he studies video with base stealers, they're looking for a tell in a pitcher on what he does when he's going to deliver the ball to home plate and what he does when he throws the ball over to first base. And he told me, and I was expecting him to say 10% or 20%, but he said he estimated about 65% of the pitchers did something differently. Do you guys do scouting reports on your pitchers to try to make sure that they don't fall into that trap?
You know, we do. We have an apparatus in place that kind of analyzes all of our guys for tipping a move to first base or maybe even tipping a certain pitch type to home plate. And, yep. You know, I would say that a lot of guys do something different on almost each pitch type or on a pick or a pitch to home plate. But a lot of it is so subtle and so small that it's hard to be actionable. We usually don't do much about that. But there are some things that are really telling, and, you know, you work immediately to correct it. And you know, you want to be as consistent as possible with certain things in your delivery or in your setup so guys can't take advantage of you and get an early jump on a steal or know what pitch is coming.
And when you're talking about scouting reports on your own pitchers, do you work on predictability, making sure that guys don't fall into the same patterns?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you want to be as unpredictable as possible. Be willing to hold the ball for a 10-second count and pitch to home plate, or, you know, hold the ball for a 10-second count and pick to first with your best pick move. And that's going to keep a, you know, potential base stealer on his toes and not willing to risk an early jump and try and time you.
And Josh, you spend your time in the bullpen during the course of the game. And I want to take you through a scenario so people kind of get a glimpse to what goes on down there. So the phone rings, we're in the sixth inning, and somebody calls down, say it's Stromme, and he says, Josh, get Blake Taylor up. Joey Gallo's up third this inning, have him ready for Gallo. Tell me what happens after that.
So, you know, typically our guys are aware of the pockets or the hitters. They would come in, yeah, situation dependent in the game. You know, Blake or when Brooks is here and active, like, they're very aware of where the left-handed hitters or the lefties that we'd want to match up against are in the lineup, where they're coming up in an inning. They know where the starting pitcher is, pitch count. So they're doing a lot of their prep before the phone rings. Typically, when the phone rings and you know, I hang up and let the guy know, hey, you're going to get up, it's right to business. Take off a hoodie or a pullover or whatever non-uniform apparel they're wearing and you know, pretty much might touch the rosin bag and then get a ball and start throwing. Everybody's a little different on the amount of information they want about the hitter. I know Blake keeps a journal. He has his own stuff. He kind of knows attack plans versus certain hitters in the lineup. And it's very really brief review that I might go over with him on the hitters that he's about to go face. Some guys are a little different and might give them a little more information about, hey, this is a good idea for an 0-0 pitch, and this is what you do when you get ahead, two strikes, and things like that.
So you're kind of just echoing some of the scouting reports you went over before the series as they're throwing their first few pitches to get ready to go out there.
Yeah, so usually I'll give them a handful of pitches just to get their body going. And once I get a sense that they are in a comfortable place to where if they were to have to go in like immediately, that they're physically ready. And that's when I might start dripping some information on them. And again, some guys get more information than others. And you know, I kind of have a feel it out process with each guy.
And when that reliever gets ready, you call back to the dugout typically and let them know, all right, Taylor's ready.
Yep, ready to go. you know, there are some specific scenarios where I wouldn't call back down. Like, say we get a call, a heads up, hey, have Blake Taylor ready for the, you know, the fourth or fifth hitter of the inning. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, assumed and implied that he's going to be ready and I don't need to call and give them the heads up unless there's some issue and he's not. But if it's an in-inning call or move, and yeah, it's, hey, Blake, go ahead, get going. Yeah. You know, you give me the thumbs up, you let me know when you're ready, and I'll call back down and let him know.
Who gets ready the fastest?
Ryan Pressly's, you know, he's ready with like three or four throws to a catcher standing up a lot of times.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll give me the thumbs up because, you know, I mean, he's better. He's been around for a long time. He knows. He very rarely throws his breaking balls in the pen warming up, which is amazing because they're two of the most, you know, incredible breaking balls on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, he just physically, he does his prep and he trusts the process that he's going to be ready. And he knows he's got eight to 10 pitches out there on the game mound too. So.
All right. One question, Josh, that we had even before the season started, and it's going to be coming up more and more. And I'm sure you guys have tossed around ideas, but like with pitchers with Luis Garcia or anybody really, when you're trying to balance going for the division and resting pitchers mm-hmm. this year, what kind of ideas have you tossed around to give a guy's breaks?
Well, you know, we've already kind of skipped Luis into the All-Star break and put him at the back end after, so that'll save a little bit. You know, we've kind of taken him out with some short pitch counts and three or four outings just to preserve an inning here or there and lessen the workload. Like, I feel like, you know, we've discussed a lot of things, and I won't go into them all here, but just being smart about having a broader view of, you know, what the season workload's going to look like and what that means going into a potential postseason this year, and then also what that means going into next year. And thinking about what's best for the player and what's best for the organization is definitely on the forefront of our minds.
And doesn't it depend on the type of pitcher? When I watch Luis Garcia, he just looks like a big pitcher who can handle a lot. I know he's approaching his career high in innings pitched, but I've talked to other people too. It just looks like mechanically he's not breaking down. He still looks strong right now, doesn't he?
Yeah, his stuff looks great. He's a really durable, strong kid who has, you know, an unorthodox wind-up delivery, but it's really consistent and repeatable. You know, the ball's been coming out really well. We've not been given any signs that we're pushing him too hard here. But I just think, you know, going forward, we'll just be smart and make good decisions, balancing, like you said, the need to try and win the division and also have a more broader view of the organization's future.
Josh, you guys are anticipating getting Josh James back and Pedro Baez, a couple of pitchers who can certainly be welcomed into that bullpen the way they've done in the past. What have you seen when you've seen both of them pitch, James and Baez?
James, they're basically like right now in the middle of like a normal spring training for the guys. So if you can imagine seeing our consistent pitchers that have been here over the years in the middle of spring training, you know, their stuff's a little bit down. They're still kind of working into shape. They're getting acclimated to maybe throwing a little more frequently. And, the standard stuff applies there. Like, they're probably going to be thrown a little bit slower than normal. They're just, like, they're building up to peak form. Pedro was, I think he's in Sugar Land. He threw an inning last night. I think Josh James is going to throw in Sugar. I think they're in Oklahoma City, but throw for Sugar Land here in the near future. And we're looking forward to getting them healthy and getting them ready to go so we can have the good firepower in the bullpen.
Last thing with Josh Miller. Josh, Framber Valdez, he pitches today. Strami was telling me the other day that he felt like there were some posture issues with his delivery. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, we looked at his last outing before the break against the Yankees that Sunday before the All-Star break. You know, it wasn't his best. That was probably his worst outing of the year. And we just looked at our normal post-game analysis, kind of looked at, hey, what went wrong, what went right, and noticed that his delivery was a little bit different from, you know, what it was early in this year and then compared to last year when he was really, really good. And we had him throw a little bullpen in Chicago when we got back from the break. And I know the results weren't great in Chicago in his start, but you know, he threw the ball pretty well and commanded things well. And the delivery was improved. He's definitely, flexing into his posture a little better and leads to more repeatable, release point and better command of his pitches.
Josh, a little kid sitting in the car with his dad right now, how does he throw harder?
Be athletic and move faster. Controlled aggression, I would say. It's not about, you know, my son's 2.5, so we haven't really done pitching lessons yet. But when I've done camps or done lessons in the past, most of the time, you're coached into being very rigid and slow to throw strikes. Not the best advice for a young kid.
You want them to speed everything up.
I want you to be athletic and throw hard and then learn how to control it to throw strikes.
There you go. That's Josh Miller, pitching coach for the Astros. Thanks for catching up.
Yep. Thanks, Mark.
Back with more Astro Launch right after this.
The 2021 season is upon us, and the Houston Astros single game tickets are on sale now. Make your plans to see the Astros live at Minute Maid Park.
Need your hat now?
From Dollar Dogs and Friday Night Fireworks to great plays and Crawford Box home runs.
Looking up, see you later!
You won't want to miss a second of the excitement at Minute Maid Park this season. We can't wait to welcome you back to the ballpark because this season is for the age. Visit Astros.com/tickets for more information and to get your tickets today.
Presley brings the hands together, high set at the letters, hands away from the body, the 1-2. Swing and a miss, got him on a slider, down and away, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros start their 6-game homestand with a 1-run victory, defeating the Cleveland Indians 4-3. Ryan Presley joins us now, and Ryan picking up the save. You hadn't pitched in a little while with the All-Star break, hadn't pitched in 9 days. Your stuff looked pretty good. How did you feel out there?
I mean, obviously felt pretty fresh. yeah. But, you know, a little rusty. Haven't been off the mound in a while, but, you know, that's not any excuses. You got to figure out a way to get it done. And having Maldi come out there and talk to me and calm me down a little bit, you know, it's greatly appreciated for sure.
Hey, whenever you haven't pitched in 9 days like this, even if it's the middle of the season, does it still feel like you get a little jitters, like it's a little foreign to you?
Not so much foreign, but yeah, you do get a little jittery because you feel fresh and you're trying to do too much, you know. And you know, I was kind of all over the place, but you know, I'm glad I got that one out of the way and not without a headache too.
Hey, how's your wife Catherine doing? I know she's pretty close to being due here, huh?
Yeah, any day, I'm on call. So if you see me come running out of the bullpen in the middle of the game, you'll know why.
All right. Well, good luck. Best of luck to you and Catherine, and thanks for joining us, Ryan.
Appreciate it, fellas.
3-1, and Alvarez drives it deep to left. Looking up, see you later! We're tied at 6. Yordan Alvarez, second home run of the game.
This is the Houston Astros.
Sharing the love, 5 RBIs for Yordan.
Radio Network.
Alvarez trying to shake out of an 0-for-22.
One of the rare times during this drought for Yordan to get ahead of the count.
Here's a 90th pitch by Mejia, and Yordan belts it deep to right field. And you can kiss that one goodbye. Into the second deck. A 2-run home run for Yordan Alvarez and a 4-1 Astros lead. That's how you break out of an 0-for-22.
Yordan, what was it like to finally hit that home run after the struggles you've been having lately?
I felt calm about it. You know, I wasn't exactly how I wanted to be in the box, but that's, you know, part of baseball. So I've just been making my adjustments, and I was able to make some adjustments that helped me out there in that at bat right there.
Yordan, can you talk about some of the things that you've worked on to try to get your swing back to where you want it?
I don't think I'm going crazy with any adjustments or anything like that. I know what I'm capable of doing, and I wasn't going crazy with any adjustments, you know, trying to get outside of myself too much. So, you know, things went well today.
When you're going through a slump like that, to not only be able to hit a home run, but to hit one like that, how fun was that to be able to break out of your slump like that?
So, yeah, it's fun to be able to break out of a slump. Obviously, when you're not in a slump, it's not a great place to be. So it's fun to get out of that. And that reminds me of a phrase that my dad always told me, that to get out of a slump, you either do it with a home run or with a bunt. So it was good to be able to do it with a home run tonight.
Yordan, how are you feeling after fouling the ball off your foot? And then Dusty told us you had a little hamstring tightness there as well. How do you think you're doing, and if you'll be able to play?
Yeah, the foot is good. The foul off the foot, I don't think was anything serious, anything to worry about. And the hamstring, yeah, just felt a little bit tight there after that play. But I don't think it's anything serious either or anything to worry about. If I wake up and I feel good, feel like I do right now, I think I have a chance to play tomorrow.
Ramirez has grounded into 10 double plays, the most on this Indians ball club.
He stands right on top of the plate. Here comes the 2-0. It's a grounder. Gurriel's got it. Goes to Correa at short. And back to first base, Greinke covering, and he keeps his foot on the bag.
and gives the thumbs up to not only Ramirez, but the first base umpire. Greinke had his foot across the bag. Ramirez may have collided a little bit with Greinke, but that was more Greinke's fault, and that's what Greinke was telling Ramirez. But it's a double play. Score it 3-6-1.
Just what the doctor ordered for the Astros there.
Zach, the defense seemed like it was really, really solid. Of course, that double play that you were involved in, but, you know, a couple good throws by Correa and Altuve as well. Just what did you think of the overall defense, and can you take us through the double play?
Yeah, defense almost always good with our team. And it was kind of just a routine ground ball, double play, just kind of got to execute it. I guess it's not routine when it's not the easiest throw for the first baseman to go there. And just have to beat the guy to the bag is the key to get the double play. And guy was sort of fast, so I guess that made it not super easy. But just kind of just do it and should be able to get it done unless there's a mistake.
Yeah, it looked like you had to stretch a little bit.
I might not have needed to. But I just did. I got there in time. So it was when I get there in time, I could stretch. If I'm not there in time, then you can't really do that.
Zach, how did the shoulder feel in between starts, and how did it feel getting back on the mound?
Good, 100% now, so nothing to worry about.
What were you all able to do to successfully navigate around the your shoulder issue that got you back to 100% and really fairly quickly?
I mean, it wasn't a serious issue. It just was sore for a while and was really wanting to try to, like, let it heal, where I've been trying to get it to heal for a while. But when you're continuing pitching, it was tougher. So just a little extra days and some medicine, and it got better.
Dusty said that they wanted to keep you around 80 pitches today. Do you feel like you can go a little bit deeper right now, or is that just going to kind of be the plan for you, at least for the present?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that would be the thought, but like my pitch coach told me that, or asked me like 10 times in the past 4 days how I'm feeling, and I keep telling him I feel great and nothing to worry about. And then same thing today, I feel great. So there's no reason to take me out for workload or injury things. But if I think the guy coming in and the team setup is to get me out of the game and put someone else in, then that's fine. But for health or injury reasons, it is not. There's no reason for that.
1-1. And Tucker blasts one deep to right center. It sends back Johnson looking up. See you later! Over the Astros bullpen, Kyle Tucker with a two-run shot. And the Astros with a 6-0 lead.
Number 16 for Tucker on the year. A no-doubter to right center field. And he knew it right away, and he admired it.
The Astros dugout, 3 hits tonight, 3 RBIs, had a big two-run home run this evening. And even your out, Kyle, was hit pretty well to left center field. It looked like you were feeling pretty good at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, Hosey started off with that big homer to start off the game for us, so... getting a jump start to the game and scoring right there was huge for us. And then, you know, we put up a lot of good ABs throughout the game to put up a lot of runs. So when we're doing that, we're winning games and we're playing well.
Kyle, it's funny. Every once in a while, people start talking, what's wrong with this Astros offense? And then you guys put out a couple of games, 23 hits already in this first two games of this series. You guys are just clicking. No panic at all in that lineup, is there?
No. I mean, we're confident in what we can do out here on the field. So, you know, if we don't hit for a couple games, you know, it is what it is. You know, we play so many games, it's tough to be locked in every single one. But, you know, we come out here, put in the work, and put up good ABs, and, you know, we have a really great offense, and, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it.
How much did that All-Star break help, too? I mean, that was right at the end of a stretch of 26 games in 27 days, I believe.
Yeah, that was kind of tough for us. I mean, you know, playing that many games in a row, you know, we were getting a little tired. But, you know, we finished off the first half pretty strong, and we're getting ready for the second half during the All-Star break. So we're looking pretty good, and, you know, we're feeling great going into the second half.
All right, Kyle Tucker, congrats on a good game, and thanks for joining us.
Cool. Thank you, guys.
10 years ago, All-Star second baseman Jose Altuve made his major league debut with the Houston Astros. Now, this 7-time All-Star owns 3 batting titles, a gold glove, the highest career batting average in franchise history, 18 postseason home runs, which is the most ever in MLB history by a second baseman, He was named the 2017 American League Most Valuable Player, and he's helped lead the Astros to 3 division titles, 2 American League pennants, and a World Series championship. Since joining the Astros family, Jose has fully embraced the city of Houston. He's made an effort to interact with Astros fans and the community throughout his entire career with the club. Thank you, Jose, for so many great moments in a spectacular first 10 years. We look forward to many, many more. Happy anniversary, young man.
So after that base hit 10 years ago today, he's gotten 1,700 more since. 1,701 career hits for Altuve. 7-time All-Star, matches Craig Biggio for the most selections in club history. And Altuve drills it deep to left center. Ramirez is back, looking up, and see you later! Off the community leader signs. Jose Altuve's 7th leadoff homer of the season, and the Astros have a 1-0 lead.
That's how you celebrate 10 years, right there for Altuve. An early lead, and he jump starts the offense.
Altuve's 21st home run of the season and his 21st career leadoff homer.
This one's blasted down the left field line, hooking, or is it? It's fair! A 2-run homer by Altuve. He stood at the plate the entire time to watch, and I think it went right over the Chick-fil-A foul pole down the left field line. And Altuve has his 2nd homer of the game on a rainbow of a homer to left field.
As I saw the fans over there right when it passed the foul pole, they all kind of looked up, and I saw a few of them like pointing like, oh, that hit that foul pole.
Jose, Dusty Baker said that your performance today was awesome, the reaction. He said this is your town. You appreciate the fans, and the fans appreciate you.
You know, I think I said it many times. They're probably the biggest reason why we go out there and play every day. We have the best fans in baseball. They support us every day, every year, and you know, it means a lot to me to get all the support and all the love we get from them.
Jose, I wonder, did you get emotional at all at any time tonight with all the outpouring of support you received?
I think the last 3 or 4 days are being a lot of emotions going through my body, because you know, like I said, it's you know, it's not easy to get to 10 years. It's, you know, one thing is dreaming about playing 10 years in the big league, and another thing is actually making it happen. So, yeah, this is very special for me. It means a lot, and especially in this team with the teammates, with the fans I have, everything is more special, I will say. You know, special day, obviously, you know, 10 years, getting the victory today, you know, hitting homers. You know, like I said earlier, it was another dream come true, and, you know, I feel very thankful and happy.
Jose, before the game, you talked about how what you've been able to do and being in the big leagues is better than you could have ever dreamed. Was this night kind of just part of like it being a dream come true?
No, absolutely. This, you know, tonight's game was, you know, another dream come true. 10 years in the big league, and, you know, we won the game. Everything today was very good, and I'm really happy.
Did the fact that it was this big anniversary play into, I guess, help energize you at all? Or why were you able to come out and get off to such a good start?
No, I mean, maybe. I just don't know. I went out there today and tried to play the same way I always play, given everything I have. And, you know, obviously I had a good game. And in the end, what it matters, what it makes the day even better is that we won the game. And
Jose, you already have 22 home runs this year, a pretty good shot to get to 30 and beyond. What's been the reason sort of behind the power surge this year, and is that, you know, something you're trying to focus on?
Yeah, no, I try to focus on swing a good pitch. I know I've been a little inconsistent lately, but, you know, tonight I went back to my plan, try to just go get one pitch, try to hit it, and you know, work out pretty good.
A 1-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on the cutter inside, and Hernandez down on strikes to end the inning. A 1-2-3 first for Garcia. That is at the knees for strike 3, and Reyes goes down looking. Second strikeout for Garcia, one away. 1-2. Swing and a miss. Got him on a cutter down and in. And that's 3 straight strikeouts for Luis Garcia. 2 outs.
This stuff is fantastic, special, really special so far. Curveball got him. Strike 3. 4th strikeout for Garcia, and there's 2 away.
And everything's working right now.
And did he go? Yes, he did. And that's five strikeouts now for Garcia. Here's the 1-2. Swing and a miss. Good slider low and in and gets Bradley. And that's six strikeouts now for Garcia.
2-2 coming to Johnson. Swing and a miss. Got him on the breaking ball. Looked like the cutter from Garcia, and he gets his seventh strikeout.
And what a job by Luis Garcia, the Astros starter, Robert. Six more scoreless innings in his rookie campaign, and it just doesn't look like he's letting down at all.
It certainly doesn't. Only allowed three singles, retired 18 of the 21 batters he faced. Was never really in trouble, especially after the Astros got him a healthy cushion with a six-run fifth.
Luis, what did you think about your outing overall tonight?
It was good. I think everything was working really good today, and I'm happy for the result.
Do you think that having some rest helped you coming into this one?
Yes, but I was already waiting to pitch, so I was, like, anxious.
Was it hard for you to wait almost 2 weeks to make this start?
I was happy to throw it again, and it was good. So
your cutter usage was way up tonight. Was that kind of the plan going in, and just how effective did you think that pitch was?
I think the cutter was working really good today, and I've been working a lot on it, and I'm happy for it.
What was your reaction, or how surprised were you at that catch by Altuve there in the third inning?
Right-handed batter Garcia delivers the first pitch to Clement. And that's a liner, and it's caught by Altuve. How did he get up that high? And who put that elevator out there? Unbelievable catch. He could have slam dunked that ball.
Yeah, backhand, too. Still looks pretty good 10 years in, wouldn't you say?
You think after 10 years he couldn't do that stuff. That was fantastic. Right in the very end of the webbing of that glove. And a little smile to boot.
Something like this. it was really good catch. So I was super happy for him. And for me too, because that was a hit.
1-1. And Tucker blasts one deep to right center. It sends back Johnson looking up. See you later! Over the Astros bullpen. Kyle Tucker with a two-run shot. And the Astros with a 6-0 lead.
Number 16 for Tucker on the year. A no-doubter to right center field, and he knew it right away, and he admired it.
Correa off second, 2-1 to Tucker, and that's a bouncing ball against the shift left side and into left center for a base hit. Correa around third, he'll score easily. Kyle Tucker picks up an RBI, his third of the game, and the Astros have a 9-0 lead.
Al, given how the offense had been kind of down over the last handful of games, how did it feel to explode like you guys did?
Yeah, it was huge for us. We're not going to hit every single game. Baseball is tough, and we play so many games. But we did do our best, and for Jose to come out right away and, get that huge homer to get us on board early was huge for us. So they kind of just started the momentum there, and we just kind of took it from there and put together good ABs and kept it rolling.
Kyle, I know that Jose had a good game, but what was it like watching Luis out there on the mound tonight?
Yeah, that was huge. I mean, he was shut down for us. I mean, he pitched a great game. There weren't too many hits against him, I don't think. And even when our offense isn't really rolling right away, when he's out there doing his thing, it gives us a good chance to have an explosive inning at some point throughout the game, or just put up a couple runs even. We feel comfortable with him out on the mound. It gives us a good chance at winning.
Kyle, you've been up here now for a few years now. Do you start to gain an appreciation of just what it takes to actually play 10 years in the big leagues?
Yeah, I mean, not many guys do that. And, we're lucky enough to have a couple guys on our team that have gotten that to that milestone. So any time you're in the big leagues is tough. And for them to get 10 years and to do it at such a high level, do it really well is amazing. So, hopefully I can get to that point at someday. But, to watch them still go out there every day and put in quality work and still perform after doing it for so many years is awesome. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, what was the mood like in the dugout? I think especially after his second one where everyone was kind of just waiting for it to drop.
Yeah, I thought it was foul. And then, just somehow clipped the foul pole. So it was cool because it was his 10-year anniversary thing from coming up. And it was cool to get that first one right away. And then for him to hit a second one was awesome. So I'm happy for him to get those runs up on the board for us, and I'm glad he did it.
Kyle, what was it like to watch and listen to the crowd reaction, the atmosphere in the building for Jose throughout the game?
Yeah, it was huge. I was excited. They played a whole video thing for him right before the game. It was fun to watch. And then they clapped for him, cheered him on for that. And then watching him play the game. And, you know, when he went up there for his first AB and hit that homer, that was huge. It was exciting for us. And I mean, he's been playing this game for so long and he's been doing it really well. So I'm happy for him.
What'd you think of that catch he made when he had to jump pretty high?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he's going to get there or not. It was close, but you know, like he's such a good player, and you know, he does stuff like that all the time. But it still amazes me every single time.
2-2, swing and a miss, got him on a breaking ball down and in. Inning is over. 1-2-3 frame for Belak, picks up his first strikeout to finish it off. Swing and a miss, got him on a slider down on the way, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros defeat the Texas Rangers by a final of 7-3. Astros have won 3 of their last 4. 2 1/3 innings of scoreless baseball, only allowed one base runner. And that was a key point in the game, Brandon, because Rangers were starting to get some momentum, trying to get back into the ball game, but you were able to basically stem the tide there.
Yeah, I know. Odor, as he came in, he worked his butt off out there tonight, made some quality pitches, and kind of got a little into trouble, but our defense and offense won us the game today, so tip the caps to them.
Brandon, your curveball looks fantastic right now. Today you were throwing it at will when you wanted to flip it in there for the first pitch strike, and when you wanted to put away, especially to the lefties, you had that curveball going.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I've been working on, just being more consistent with my pitches, because my slider's been the one that's been getting me in trouble, so relying on the curveball lately has been the game plan.
Hey, how much fun is it sitting out in the bullpen and watching this Astros offense? You know, that big 5-run third inning. It seems like we see this on the regular basis from them.
It's pretty amazing. This whole team is special. I can't wait to see what this team does in the future.
All right, Brandon Belak, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on the win.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Correa drills one deep to left field. Gets that one goodbye. Back-to-back jacks for the Astros.
Boy, no doubter for Carlos Correa.
This is the Houston Astros,
who's having a season to remember for the Astros
Radio Network.